The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
Whether you listen to radio or television, you hear the experts telling you either to buy or to save or to spend. And it doesn't matter which expert you listen to, you're going to hear some opposite point of view.
Evening News continues now with our special report on Economics Made Simple. Here once again is the noted authority, Dr. Frederick Taylor Knox.
You know, today's seemingly perplexing economic situation really isn't that way, once you look at a few simplified charts. Now, let's...
Remember, right now, the market offers some of the best values to come along in over 20 years. There has never been a better time to see your broker, who will tell you
that stocks go down as easily as they go up. That's why you need a 6-year certificate account, because with our long-term, high-yield, federally insured accounts, you'll always be sure
that inflation will gobble up everything that you've been able to save, unless you consider...
All models are available for immediate delivery, so hurry on down and make your selection now. And don't forget, you can use your cash rebate to
pay higher gasoline prices. Officials propose that this increased revenue will go directly into
tax loopholes. Tax loopholes. Now, this has always been a problem for us. I think that
this tax rebate legislation is designed to fight recession, make more cash available to consumers, and stimulate the economy
by urging the general public to spend as little as possible and save as much as they can.
And solid gold bullion, which is an interesting subject in itself, as we see in this report.
Unemployment reached an all-time high. It's expected to peak out at the beginning of the next quarter, depending on the availability of...
Strikes have been called against 4 major manufacturing firms after negotiations broke off due to
a lack of interest. Money available to borrowers can be halted. Well, there you have it in a nutshell, friends. The really simple explanation of our nation's economic ill, our problem of inflation. Or, as some would call it, a stagflation. Of course, some economists insist that we're in a deep recession, but, well, you know what we mean, don't you?
This has been Economics Made Simple with Dr. Frederick Taylor Knox. And now, stay tuned as evening news continues with the local weather outlook.
They tell you today to buy stocks, find tax shelters and loopholes. They tell you to spend your rebate. They tell you to put it in the bank and save it. Or maybe some people are even wondering about moving into that wilderness area and hiding out and waiting for doomsday. Some want the government to speed up the economy, others want them to slow it down, and a large number have opted just to try to forget about it as long as they possibly can on the eat, drink, and be merry principle, perhaps. But we're living in a day where America is having to adjust to a completely new kind of a lifestyle. We need to find out how to keep our heads above water in this tidal wave of inflation that threatens to engulf us. So today the average American is pulled and pushed and squeezed from every conceivable direction financially. Everybody gets hurt. And like a thief in the night, the wage earner's take-home pay is being stolen, robbed of its earning power. It's unmercifully robbed those on fixed incomes whose wages earned their pensions or their savings accounts or their property investments so many years ago, who are now finding it almost impossible to stay above water. The high-income man is hurt too, believe it or not. If he holds stocks, bonds, and bank accounts, he finds his savings have lost 20% or more of the purchasing power they had during the last decade. And the employment scene is equally chaotic today. Layoffs extend all the way from top to bottom, from people on assembly lines and day laborers to middle management and executive levels. And now, most confused of all are young college students who are in classes where they're trying to become technically skilled and able to go out training for a profession, where they find the professionals in that same field are being laid off in droves today. Well, how do you view times like this? What do we do about it on a day-to-day, grassroots, personal level? Is there any way you can survive in this crossfire between inflation and unemployment? We'd like to take a look at inflation and unemployment and some really positive steps you can take. For over 20 years in the United States, we hadn't really thought much about inflation. It was something, some kind of a disease that maybe other countries contracted, like Latin America. We were immune. But now the dollar is shrinking very rapidly. Say in 1946 it took $1 to buy a dollar's worth of goods. In 1956 that dollar was worth only 72 cents. In 1966 that same dollar was worth 60 cents. And now that 1946 dollar is down to 38 cents compared to the purchasing power it had in 1946. Carrying this out further, by the year 2000, if prices only rise by 3% a year between now and then, the 1946 dollar will be worth only 18 cents. If the average price rise is 6% per year, the 1946 dollar will be worth only 9 cents, and only 4 cents if prices rise by 9% a year. That's rather unbelievable, isn't it? Well, inflation is, in the simplest definition, too much money, or in our case, too many dollars chasing too few goods, with the result that each dollar buys fewer and fewer of those goods available. It's been labeled public enemy number one, and quite aptly so. In fact, a brief glance around the world reveals inflation as the world enemy number one. In the last year, prices have risen over 12 to 14% in the United States. In France, the rate of inflation is about 16% for the franc, the Canadian dollar over 10%. It's a sobering lesson from history that democracies cannot survive inflation rates of over 20% for very long. But now we see the pace is slightly over 20% for the Japanese economy, about 25% for the Italian lira, nearly 20% for the British pound, and over 25% for the Brazilian cruzeiro and the Indian rupee. The Israeli pound has suffered between 35 to 40% inflation rate. One of the problems that we experience today of runaway inflation is really only mild when you compare it with what happened in post-World War I and pre-World War II Germany. Germany lived through a period in the early 20s when it suffered the worst inflation in all of modern history, and she didn't emerge unscathed. It all began with World War I. Instead of raising taxes to finance his war machine, the Kaiser relied on the printing press. For the mark, it was all downhill after that. Before 1914, 4 German marks could be exchanged for $1. By the end of 1922, nearly 7,000 marks were needed to purchase $1, and then inflation really took off. Wallets were replaced by wheelbarrows as means of carrying money. A bank teller didn't count money. He weighed it. Workers were paid 2 or 3 times a day, so their wives could dash to the stores and buy essentials before prices rose further. Forests were decimated to get paper for the money presses. By 1923, the German government required 300 paper mills and 2,000 printing presses just to keep up with the demand for money. The German writer Conrad Haydn described the days he lived through. He said, and I quote, "When you reached the store, a pound of sugar might have been obtainable for 2 million marks. But by the time you came to the counter, all you could get for 2 million was half a pound. It was the end of the old shining hope that everyone would be rich." A certain man received a polite letter one day. "The bank deeply regrets that it can no longer administer your deposit of 68,000 marks, since the costs are all out of proportion to the capital. Since we have no banknotes in small enough denominations at our disposal, we have rounded up the sum to 1 billion marks. Enclosed, please find 1 billion mark bill." So the man who thought he had amassed a small fortune, 68,000 marks in a bank, was sent 1 billion marks in the mail. But by the time he received that letter, the stamp on the envelope had already cost 20 billion marks, or 20 times as much as the check that he found inside. When the German hyperinflation was finally spent, one egg cost 80 billion marks and a loaf of bread 200 billion marks. The middle class were totally impoverished, and out of the turmoil rose the National Socialists and Adolf Hitler. Democracy and rampant inflation have had a very hard time in historical lesson existing together. So let's hope our problems don't get that bad in the United States and Canada and the Western democracies of the world, for that matter. Don't really expect that they will. Most don't. I think most experts would tell you there is a great deal of optimism for the future. But the question to concern most of us right now is, what personally can we do? The water may not be as high yet as it was in Germany during those dark days, but we've still got to keep our heads above it. We'll be back in just a minute to discuss how to do just exactly that. But first, take a look at this booklet, which does have some concrete information you can use in a day-to-day sense of managing your personal household finances.
How many radio and television commercials have you heard which get your attention with an assuring voice saying, "You owe it to yourself to look your very best, so begin each morning this way." Or you might hear a persuasive voice saying, "You owe it to yourself to get away for a while, let us fly you there." "You owe it to yourself" is a phrase which gets attention. But do you really owe it to yourself? Or do you owe it to the finance company? Nothing down with easy repayments is a road we all have to walk sometimes, but it can lead to needless debt instead of the good life. Managing Your Personal Finances is a free booklet that gives a step-by-step guide to sound money management. If you have a financial headache, you know there's no easy answer. But Managing Your Personal Finances points out 6 rules which will help you end your money worries and lead to real financial prosperity. Request your free copy of Managing Your Personal Finances. You owe it to yourself. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
This booklet on Managing Your Personal Finances is a very practical booklet. It talks about principles of financial stability and tells you how to take some emergency measures that might be required on an immediate basis to get yourself into some kind of a stable financial condition at home. And this booklet, by the way, is absolutely free of charge. It has nothing to do with a money-making scheme. It's merely sound practical advice. It's free of charge. If you're like most people, though, inflation is picking your financial pocket. But what causes it? Who is the real culprit? Is there some group somewhere everybody's telling you about Jewish bankers or about communists or the Illuminati or the Rothschilds or the federal government or the military or the CIA? The world is filled with all kinds of hoodlums and suspects who are guilty of all of these terrible problems. But as we said before, inflation is easily defined as too much money chasing too few goods. Prime examples of this are the shortages of recent date, most notably in energy, oil, and of course food, which contributed heavily to inflation from 1973 on. But such shortages only contributed to this inflationary cycle. It didn't really start it. To find the beginning, you've got to look at the prodigious supply of money, the fact of too much money available as the culprit. And where did that come from? The answer is quite simple. Massive deficit spending by our federal government. It was during the Johnson administration, from 1964 through 1968, that our money supply in America increased over 45%. But the increase in the amount of goods was not more than 25%. When Nixon took over, things didn't get a bit better. So when we look at the whole decade, from 64 to 73, the money supply increased by 120%, while the amount of goods increased by only about 50%. The genesis of our galloping inflation is the doubling of the money supply from 64 to the present, and the trend is still going on. The major reason for this doubling of the money supply was the enormous financial expenditure of the Vietnam War. While protesters and the media concentrated on the moral issues of the war, we failed to notice the economic problems that were emerging. Despite the concerned pleas of President Johnson's economic advisors that new taxes must be levied or else there would be a devastating inflation, nothing was done. It would be terribly unpopular for Americans to be told to give a little extra out of their personal income tax to support an unpopular war. Shortly before leaving office, President Johnson had this to say: "We knew we needed action on taxes in 1966, but I was told that I could get but 4 votes in the Tax Committee of Congress out of a possible 25. So, in true Kaiser Wilhelm fashion, we tried to pay for that war by increasing the money supply, just printing money, instead of by hiking taxes. Inflation is an economic disease, generally caused by a kind of a political virus. It's the nature of people to want something for nothing, and of course, governments tend to cater to those desires. So the next time any politician tells you about some pie-in-the-sky idea, we must have these programs, the poor, education, and this and that, why don't you ask him, how does he plan to pay for it?" Today we live not only in an era of runaway inflation, but also more and more unemployment. As economist Paul Samuelson put it, there's no problem about how to stop inflation. It's easy. All you have to do is to arrange for a severe enough depression. The price for stopping double-digit inflation, though, is high unemployment, and we're paying that price right now. As inflation is transformed into recession, the economic burden shifts and comes to rest more heavily on the shoulders of one group, the jobless. As the number of job openings shrinks, the chronically unemployed are more unemployable than ever before. And now they become joined by people who never thought they would lose their jobs, people whose lives seem to be absolutely secure. Entire industrial plants are now being shut down. All of a sudden, the company that seemed to be doing a thriving business that was growing in every way begins to lay off hundreds or even thousands of workers. So mechanics, clerks, technicians, and even executives now compete for very scarce jobs. We talked with at least one government official and a number of unemployed people concerning the plight of the jobless and the perplexing problems they all uniformly must face.
Mr. Tompkinson, what kind of job picture do we find as far as unemployment in this country at large today?
Well, I think overall it's pretty poor at the present time in all segments. I would hope that it would get better before long, but I really can't see anything that would indicate it at this time. The office is really too small for the claim load that we have to take care of. We do serve a population area of almost 500,000 people. And this is their office for jobs, their office for unemployment insurance. So as a result, we just have a lot of people through here every day. Anywhere from 15 to 1,800 people a day.
How long have you been out of work?
About 3 months.
I have been unemployed for about 4 months now and unable to find a job as a medical receptionist anywhere.
It's almost going on almost a year now, you know, and I do a little gardening here and there, you know.
What is the emotional state of some of the people who come into the office here?
They do have a problem. The statistics that I talked about a few minutes ago, 8.2%, that doesn't mean a thing to a man that's unemployed and has a family to support. If he's unemployed, the unemployment rate is 100%.
Most everybody's kind of upset and disappointed, you know. Don't understand why that a job that they had before just seemed to disappear, you know, whereas it seemed like everything just went off right, like it's going over a cliff. Everything was going along smooth and then just dropped off.
Well, it's starting to get really depressing, you know, because, you know, it seems like you're always getting the door slammed on your face or something. You know, you should have been there a little bit earlier. If you would have been there a little bit earlier, I would have got it.
It's anxiety and depression and worry. I don't know when I'm going to pay my rent next. If the landlord isn't a little lenient, then I don't know what I'm going to do. It's really bad.
What's the major adjustment your family's had to make?
Quite a bit. We have sacrificed in order to live on unemployment, if that's what you mean.
Who can make an adjustment financially down? You know, it's like asking you if you can take a lower job and half your pay and still, you know, live at the existing rate you're living. You know, of course you can't.
You find the desire of the people served by this office to be pretty high in terms of returning to work?
I think the majority of people very definitely want to go back to work. I think that the biggest problem today is the fact that there are few or no jobs. Our job boards that we have out in the lobby, as recently as last summer, were filled. Now they're less than half full.
I have applied for jobs such as being a waitress and things, and surprisingly, even that is hard to find. There are so many millions of people who want this type of jobs also.
So you're saying you'd even take a different job with a pay cut if you had to, if you could find one?
Oh, certainly. Anything to bring in some income of some kind. Anything.
Well, there's plenty of jobs out there if you want to take them at the rate of pay. It seems that the employers have taken advantage of the job market right now because there's so many people unemployed that it's an employer's market. They say, you know, you want a job, $4 an hour. Normally they'd be paying $7 an hour.
Do you know anything about what people's attitudes are as far as major adjustments that they would have to make or have tried to make in getting jobs, not necessarily within their vocational fields?
One real important thing is that when you go in to look for a job, you go in with almost an aggressive attitude. You want a job. You have a service that you can sell that employer that's going to make it worth his time and his money to hire you.
The problems are almost endless. One sound piece of advice I can give you is to get your name on a mailing list of The Plain Truth, which is also fighting inflation. We went from a 52-page, four-color slick magazine to tabloid, newsprint, double the amount of copy that we had in here, articles which almost every single issue have to do with the economy and these day-to-day problems, including physical health, life, death, and the hereafter. Here is the article on the incredible human potential, the politics of desperation. Here is the grain and the food versus population problem exposed in The Plain Truth, which is also fighting inflation and recession. By going to tabloid, we're coming out twice as often with about double the copy, the number of articles. And they're short and to the point, easily readable in a few moments. And we have also sent tens of thousands of these to doctors and dentists' offices, to local libraries and to public facilities all across the country. We're aiming toward a subscription list, pre-subscription, of over 5 million. And from there, who cares? We're going to continue to give it away as long as we can. The United States today, however, is going through a kind of a massive sociological experiment. For example, Years ago, during the famous Nixon-Khrushchev argument over kitchens and tail fins, the big car was the symbol of status for Americans. The bigger, the more American, and the better. Now, almost overnight, it seems, the big car keep up with the Joneses society has to adjust to being a small car keep your head above water society. And we're finding out it's not very easy. As a matter of fact, compared to the rest of the world, we're a nation of spoiled rich kids who don't know what it's like to do without. Many studies have found that Americans are not sociologically or psychologically equipped, either through the keep up with the Joneses pattern of life or their own personal way of living in their private homes, to make these sacrifices and adjustments. A lot of people have been living with financial brinkmanship way beyond their means, credit card spending, buying when they didn't have the money to buy, and so of course they're out on a financial limb. One of the basic things that people should do is to seek professional help. Did you know, for example, there are over 160 nonprofit consumer credit agencies in the United States, and these agencies have been a tremendous help to a lot of people. People have found out their situation wasn't as hopeless as they thought it was, and that the road out of debt wasn't all that difficult to walk.
For 40 years, the Plain Truth magazine has been supplying the missing dimension in education. The Plain Truth is published monthly as a facet of Ambassador College's In the Home educational service. It maintains an editorial policy that incorporates this missing dimension in education, biblical understanding. The Plain Truth, timely, informative articles deal with subjects covering success in business, recreation, politics, religion, farming. Each issue not only documents the state of today's society, but offers hope for a better world tomorrow. To serve its more than 6 million readers, The Plain Truth is published in 5 languages and is available without price or obligation to all who request it. Join the growing worldwide readership. Request your subscription to the magazine with a 40-year history of educational service to mankind. The Plain Truth. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
There are 7 basic steps on how to keep your head above financial water that's too deep for you. First of all, seek professional help. There are, as I said, many such agencies, 160 of them, nonprofit consumer credit counseling agencies in the United States, and they're listed in the white pages of your telephone book. All you've got to do is to get up after the program and go find one and give them a call the first thing you can. Second, very important, and the professional counselor will probably tell you this if you talk to him, you should immediately get in touch with your creditors. Don't try to hide. Don't try to juggle bills and treat these people as if they are anonymous or your hated enemies because they've done you, as people say. Get in touch with them. Explain to them why you're having difficulty making your payments. If you've lost your job, if you've had unexpectedly high medical expenses, if there's been a divorce proceeding or something, whatever the reasons, surprisingly, you might find out when you talk, when you level with these creditors, they are also human. They might even suggest easier payment terms. Or they may only be interested in knowing when you're going to be able to resume making payments. It'd be a lot easier in the long run if you don't hide it. And also, you don't have the same psychological problem. You are facing it directly then. Third, be on guard against abusing credit. Use credit cards only for the sake of convenience, or if you have no cash with you at the time from some oversight, but not to borrow. To put it another way, use credit cards to avoid the risk and inconvenience of paying cash if you're worried in our society about crime or something. But don't use them to purchase things which you could not afford to buy at that time if you had all the cash you possess in your pocket. Don't use credit cards to put off something. Fourth, start a budget. Get out a piece of paper and a pencil and put your income down and start with your major items like rent and automobile and transportation and entertainment and clothing and so on, and find out exactly where you stand. You'd be amazed to find that there are millions of Americans who have never sat down to make out a simple budget. Fifth, consider taking a second part-time job, if you even have a present full-time job, in order to bring in extra money while you catch up on your bills. It might be a lot easier on a lot of families if the wife could even bring in supplementary income and the kids. And as a matter of fact, one more practical thing I want to add to that: in a second job, a pretty interesting job can be in your own backyard. Family gardens, and I did understand at one time that the Burpee company was actually out of seeds, which I thought was tremendous because I've been talking so long about how we ought to be growing carrots in our front yards instead of just wasting the water on crabgrass. But starting a home garden can be a tremendous interest not only to keep a family together, but save a lot of money. Sixth, if you're unemployed, find out all about the federal and state programs that might be available. Do you know that we, even working among members of the church, find that there are thousands of people who get turned away at the door when they're given that first no by some agency, some official? I've heard some of these terrible stories about people traveling 30, 40 miles day after day after day to get the food stamps that are legally available for them to be turned away because they just don't persevere, or because a lot of times some bureaucrat is just a rather inhuman type who doesn't really take into account people's physical needs. So find out about the federal and state programs that may be available to help you. Child support, food stamps, everything available. The burden of a recession falls heaviest on the unemployed. The federal and state programs are the methods that were voted in when the politician with his pie-in-the-sky promises got elected to office, promising the people all these things. If he's there, if the program exists, then by all means, take advantage of it. It's one method of equalizing that burden. Seventh, and most important, get back on a cash basis, even if you have to lower your standard of living dramatically. But only those things for which you can pay for in full should be purchased. Make the use of credit except for convenience or safety, as mentioned, a rare exception. Keep your head well above water so that if you should lose a job, you won't be flooded with unpaid bills. And remember that sacrifices will have to be made. Well, there's a lot of sound advice beyond what I've said in this book about managing your personal finances. You can't solve the problem just in a few moments of thinking about it. It's not going to go away that easily. All of these solid steps that I've given you are practical. They will work. There are many more in this booklet about managing your personal finances that you need.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.